I saw that if we don't learn about it, we are going to make mistakes, because you look at two products that I know are completely different, but they actually look the same quite early on. And I was like, wow, we've either got to not do this at all or actually do it properly. So I kind of delved into learning about it. And I said to my husband, who's not at anything medical, and I said, I genuinely feel like I need to go back to uni and do a whole new degree. Hi, I'm Louise McLean, proprietor at Capital Chemist Southlands in the ACT and winner of Guild Pharmacy of the Year. And you're listening to The Guild Dispensary.
Welcome to The Guild Dispensary, the pharmacy podcast where we dispense the latest news and updates from The Guild, and you get to hear from industry experts on business and pharmacy-related topics.
The Guild Pharmacy of the Year Award recognises pharmacies that are leading the way in providing innovative and optimal healthcare for members of their community. This year's winner is none other than Capital Chemist Southlands, who took home the Excellence in Business Management category victory, as well as the overall Pharmacy of the Year Award. One of their guiding principles is that if something is worth doing, it's worth doing well, and you should prioritise and focus on it. And that is something that is clearly proven to be successful. Praised for their excellent business strategy, leadership, and understanding of their community, Southlands is a worthy winner of the award. Today, we'll speak to Louise McLean, one of the owners of Capital Chemist Southlands, and we'll get to hear a little bit about her Pharmacy of the Year experience, as well as some of the things they've done throughout the years.
First up, it's time for What You May Have Missed, where we catch up on the latest news from the Guild. In the fast-paced world of pharmacy, it's easy to overlook some key updates. So let's dive in and make sure you're up to speed.
Digital health research, member views sought. Digital health is having an ever-increasing impact on community pharmacy. Electronic prescriptions, My Health Record, and new authentication and verification systems are changing the way community pharmacies operate and care for their patients. The Guild is partnering with Orima Research to assess the impacts of digital health on community pharmacies to better understand members' needs. This research will help the Guild and the Australian Digital Health Agency support community pharmacies as they adopt new digital health tools and initiatives. How can you be involved? Well, we are currently looking for expressions of interest from members willing to share their digital health experiences. Interested members will be randomly selected and invited to participate in a combination of short, 20 to 30 minutes, video/phone interviews, and online focus groups held across April and May 2024. Details of all registrants and participants will be kept confidential by Orima Research. The Guild will share an advanced summary of the research findings with all pharmacies that registered their interest in the project. If you are interested in participating, please look for the Guild alert in your inbox and follow the link. Patient-signed PBS prescriptions will not return, Guild confirms. The Guild can confirm that the requirement for a patient to provide written acknowledgement, e.g. a signature, of receipt of a pharmaceutical benefit has been permanently repealed from PBS legislation. This arrangement is now permanent, and patients do not have to go back to signing PBS prescriptions on collection. The confirmation follows a lack of clarity about the exemption after it expired on March 31st. The Guild advocated on your behalf and confirmed with the Department of Health and Aged Care that patient signatures on PBS prescriptions will not return. The removal of the signature requirements follows a pledge to the same effect last year given by the Minister for Health and Aged Care, Mark Butler, at APP 2023. Quote, "That goes precisely in the wrong direction," end quote, he said at the time. The Guild welcomes this common sense approach to ensuring that patients are not unnecessarily burdened in administrative red tape. Signature requirements do still apply to safety net patient record forms, and patients/carers and pharmacists are still required to sign acknowledgement. The Guild has been provided a copy of the updated regulation, which is now public. Find out more at the PBS website, pbs.gov.au, and search for National Health Pharmaceutical Benefits Regulations 2017 Amendments. Hi Louise, it's great to have you here, and pretty exciting because you recently won Guild Pharmacy of the Year. So obviously, I have to start off by giving you a big congratulations for such an amazing achievement. The award, it was announced live in front of a large crowd at APP recently at the opening plenary, which I'm sure set a pretty good tone for the rest of the conference for you. I know it must seem like a bit of a blur looking back on it, but can you tell us how you felt when you heard your pharmacy's name being announced as the winner? What went through your mind?
I think I'm probably not allowed to say exactly what I said, so I won't say what I said. Massive, massive shock. Stace and I were not, we were genuinely not expecting it at all. So it felt very surreal. It actually still does. It really doesn't. It's like, oh, yeah, that happened. But it kind of just doesn't feel real. I think we, behind the scenes, we've welcomed a new partner into the business, and that was actually happening the week after APP. So we haven't really been able to celebrate the way we want to, because we were sort of kind of celebrating and doing everything, and then we had to go and do other stuff behind the scenes, and it's all been a bit crazy. But, you know, that happens in life where other stuff has to go on. But, yeah, quite genuinely, it was quite like, oh, my God, that's actually us. And then we're like, oh, my God, we have to stand up and we have to go down there, and that's still, yep, that's us, and that's our name on the trophy. So it was very unexpected.
Had you prepared a speech just in case?
We actually did at about 11 o'clock the night before. We thought, okay, we better do this just in case, but we won't need it. And sort of Stace had written something and I wrote something, and then I sat there and sort of, you know, we put it together and we're like, okay. And the decision was made because I did the speaking on the video. Stace said, well, I'm happy to do, to say, you know, do the speech, which I think was lovely, because I don't want it to be all about me, because it's very much a team effort between the two of us over the last 8 years that we've been in partnership together. So I thought that was awesome, but it's terrifying standing on that stage when you're not naturally, we don't naturally do things like that. So she did really well.
So you said it was a bit surreal. You still look back on it and think, oh, yeah, that happened. You haven't really had a chance to celebrate. You've been probably pretty busy with the new partner. Because I was going to ask, now that it's all settled down, you're kind of back in the rhythm and the groove of working, have you had a chance to celebrate? But you just said that you haven't. So are there plans to celebrate, to go out for dinner, to get everybody together?
Yeah, so I have actually put I sent a notice out to all the staff, because we've got so many staff, it's hard to get everyone together. And I said, I said genuinely my apologies that we haven't sort of really discussed what we're going to do, because at the end of the day, they are the guys who won this award for us, not us, with everything they do. But the plan is we'll do something in store for all the customers, and then we will do something, we'll take the staff out. And I have to, I'm going to propose a few things and see what people want to do. But there's definitely plans. It just hasn't come to fruition yet.
Very good. Now, interestingly, you were nominated by a customer, which must have made you feel pretty special when somebody in the community that you're looking after, a patient, gives you great validation like that. Did you ever get to meet the person who nominated you, or is it a mystery? Do you know who it is?
I don't know who it is. I have asked the Guild. I said, please tell us who it is. And they're like, we can't tell you. They did send us the little, like a blurb of what they wrote in the submission. And we thought we'd figured it out from a scenario. And we kind of sussed the customer out without specifically saying, did you nominate us? And they either are keeping it really quiet or it wasn't them. So I don't know who it was. But it was when it first came, the nomination first came through, and comes through the email, and I was like, nah, that's not real. And they're like, yeah, I think it's real. And I'm like, nah, that's not real. And I thought, oh, I better ring the Guild to check. So I rang, and Charlene was like, yeah, you've got to do this. And then actually, because there's so much, as anyone who's familiar with pharmacy will understand what we were all going through last year. And it was like, wow, because I think this award, it's awesome, and I would encourage anyone to do it. However, it's actually a lot of work behind the scenes. And so I do understand people who get nominated and say, for whatever reason, I just can't kind of go through with it, which I do understand. But Gary Cairns, who's one of the founders of the Capital Chemist Group, rang me that night on my phone. I remember I was at work, and everyone had gone home, and I was just doing some stuff, and it was dark. And he said, oh, I'm just ringing to say congratulations, and I'm so proud of you. And, you know, they're very proud of everyone in the group, Roger and Gary. And he said, you realize you have to do it. And I said, Gary, I know, but I don't know if I have the energy. And he said, you have to do it for you, for the customer, for your business, and for the group and the industry. And I went, okay. Because when he rings you and says, you have to do it, you have to do it. And then he says, and if you do it, you have to do it properly. And I said, Gary, and he's known me for a long time. I said, if there's one thing you know about me, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly. I won't do it, you know, a half attempt. And he's like, okay, good. And that was it.
So even though it's a lot of work, the application process, and as you rightly say, that can put a lot of people off, whether it's a Telstra Business Award or something like this. It is a lot of effort when you could be spending that time and energy on your business or even on your personal life. Would you say it's still a really good and interesting process to go through to give you the opportunity to reflect on your journey and what you've achieved?
Yeah, definitely. It's very valuable. I think the process this time, we were fortunate enough to be part of it in 2016. So I had a little bit of an idea what was ahead of me, but it was quite different this time, I think for the better. One of the things we had to do was look at financial data over the last 3 years or the previous 3 years, so growth of the business, which we do as a group. We're very fortunate with all the data analysis and stuff we can get. I know there are stores that are not as fortunate as us. So I think it's really valuable if you don't regularly look at your financials and sort of see where you're improving or not improving. But it's quite, in some ways, it's good to sit there and go, oh, yeah, that was 3 years ago. Because often you just look at the last financial year, you know, or you compare this year to last year kind of thing. You look at 12 months, you don't really go back that far. And because it was COVID as well, so it was that crazy time. But it was interesting going, oh, yeah, we did that. And then we're allowed to do those vaccines now. We couldn't do those vaccines last time, or, you know, all their new services and stuff like that. But I think I'd encourage anyone to do it. Just be prepared for, you know, you've got to dedicate a few hours to kind of put everything together. That's all.
You mentioned that you didn't never wanted it to be about you and your partner, and I'm sure you'll agree with this statement that a pharmacy is only as good as its team, and evidently you seem to have a very, very good one. Can you tell us a little bit about them and what makes them so special?
Apart from the number, which is a challenge in a way of sort of keeping track of everybody and supporting everyone, I feel a bit like their mum sometimes. We're very lucky. We've got 12, I'm trying to think how many, I think it's 12 pharmacists on our team, and the rest is pharmacy assistants, pharmacy students, uni students. So lots of different backgrounds, ages, experience levels, skills, which is essential, because if you've got people who are all good at the same thing and then all bad at the same thing, then some stuff's done really well and some stuff's not done at all. Something that's super important to us is the personality mix. And I often say to people, hire someone if they're the right person. You can always teach skill, but you can't change someone the way someone is or their personality. So as long as they're going to fit in, because with that many people, everyone has to get along. They don't have to hang out outside work. They don't have to be friends. I mean, there are some beautiful friendship groups, and we've had a couple of relationships and one marriage come out of it, which is awesome. But I think that's probably the key. And they're all very supportive of one another. Even me at work this morning, I'm like, oh God, I haven't been at work much lately. Can I check what, you know, it was like an NIP flu vaccine question. Is this right with this and this, you know? So, I don't know. I suppose that's probably the key, is just that they all get along, support one another, support each other's strengths and weaknesses. But the key is that personality mix, is that we, you know, we get, I feel that we've got that right.
It sounds like a special team, but as you said, it's a pretty big team. How did you tell them about it, and what was the response when you finally got the word out?
So as far as the win, the joy of the internet and technology and a WhatsApp group, because it was just Stace and I who were up. Tim, one of our pharmacists, he flew up that morning. But quite genuinely, I would love to have had everyone up there. I mean, we've got a staff WhatsApp group, and there was actually quite a lot of staff from head office who were there. And so Andrew Topp, our CEO, was like sending photos and almost like, okay, so this is being announced now, and this is being announced now, and then this, and this is that. And then, they won. And then he was actually, he'll probably be so embarrassed me saying this, but he was crying so much. It was just awesome. And he's like, oh, and then almost stumbled down the stairs. And it was actually quite a genuinely beautiful kind of scene of what was happening. But, yeah, so that's how the staff. And then what they all did is they went to the supermarket, which is opposite us. They bought all these non-alcoholic alcoholic drinks, fake alcohol, I'll call it. And they sent us a picture of the fridge. So they'd gone and bought heaps of that. And then when they cooled off, they sent us a picture of them having a drink. And then my mother, actually, I rang mum and dad afterwards, after we'd done all our formal stuff. And she goes, I'm going to go to the pharmacy and say congratulations and make sure that they're all celebrating. So there was a... She's 80. It was gorgeous. So there was a lot of, certainly a lot of excitement at home in our absence, which was great because it's there. I've told them it's their award, 100%. So it was really good.
Beautiful. So Louise, let's move into some of the questions that are more pointed around your business operations. Back in 2019, your pharmacy had a five-year plan, and during the past 5 years, you have added things like additional consult rooms, refitted the pharmacy, installed a robot, and even devised a whole plan on how to offset the impacts of 60-day dispensing. It's not lost on anybody listening that it can often be so hard for businesses to take the time to plan like you did and then actually follow through and execute, simply because we're also busy day to day working in the business so often. Share with us what the process was like and then what the journey has been like and the results you've realized in terms of the impact on the business.
Some of those things were done out of necessity. And some of those things were done out of, yeah, we definitely need to do this because the business is growing, kind of. So the, for example, the things like the consult rooms, we had two and we always knew, yeah, we need more. Because if you go back to pharmacy 20 years ago where consult rooms didn't exist, now that I consider it's a standard essential requirement for pharmacy, customers, once you've got a private room, that they want to go there to have a conversation. They don't want to stand in the pharmacy discussing their rash or whatever. Whereas 20 years ago, it was just, you know, you'd kind of try and find a quiet spot and make it work. And then we knew we were going to get slammed with vaccinations, although we had no idea really of timing. And we thought, okay, let's just plan ahead because it's going to happen. So, and, you know, doing renovations, you can't just decide. It's not like going to Bunnings and buying stuff and doing a weekend warrior kind of thing. Like, it sort of requires a bit more planning. So, so we thought, okay, well, really in the next 6 to 9 months, we are going to have to do COVID vaccines, which we were more than happy to do. We had the staffing levels to be able to do it. So that was how that kind of came about. We did that, and the guys that do all our refits, we use the same guys, so they've got our floor plans, and that's all very, you know, it's easy. And then I'm trying to think of the big stuff we did, because that was April 2021, we did that. And then we always knew we'd wanted to put in a robot, but they're expensive. And it's not just coming up with the money for a robot. You've got to do a refit of at least the dispensary in a pharmacy. So, you know, you sort of basically double the cost of a robot, and that's sort of the outlay. And we always wanted to put one of those in, and it was really we just increased in busyness, for want of a better term, of prescription volume so quickly. And Stace and I we'd often stay back at night and put the dispensary order away because we needed the staff to, you know, serve customers and do what they're trained to do rather than stand there and put stock away. And we looked at each other. I think it was a Friday night. We looked at each other and we went, this is crazy. We're just going to make it work. So that was why we brought forward that. As far as it was literally in our 5-year plan, and we're like, we need to do this next year. And then a lot of stuff kind of flows from that. So 60 days was an interesting thing. And I think there's two ways of coping with challenges in life. One is to go, this is horrendous, the sky's falling and it's all going to be terrible and we're all going to go broke. And the other one is, this is happening. Because for people, you know, people listening who may not have been in the industry for a long time, this was tabled in 2018, this 60-day policy. So I always knew it was going to happen. It was not if, it was when. So for me, I didn't like how it was announced. It was very quick and very, oh my God, okay. So that was quite horrifying. But the reality of it happening was always going to happen. And so with that, it's the approach of, okay, well, this is happening. It's pretty terrible, but we've got to deal with it. So how are we going to overcome it rather than sitting there and wallowing and, you know, being all upset? So we got the projected financial loss for us as a business. There was two different platforms that did it. And then we literally went to the coffee shop, Stace and I, sat down and had a look at what we could do to offset. And that was, we did that in May with 60 days due to hit in September. So we had a good few months planning, and we went down to the cent and the, you know, the items in the shop and the services and how much we charge for this, and this is our wages, and we've got, you know, we called a meeting with the staff and assured them of that none of them would lose their job, because that was a genuine fear for a lot of staff. Our approach as far as people go or staff go, it was normally if we'd have a staff member leave, we'd look at replacing them. In that situation, we go, do we actually need to replace them right now? Or let's leave it and see, kind of things like that, as opposed to anyone losing their job. And we just reassured, we were really honest with everyone. We said, this is the reality of what it will mean for us as a business. This is what we're going to do about it. And we really just got to kind of roll with it.
One of the big things your pharmacy provides is medicinal cannabis, which hasn't actually been as easy as it might seem from an outsider's perspective. To help others, you created a Facebook group specifically for pharmacists to learn more about cannabis. What led you to this, and how's that whole process gone for you?
So what led me to that Facebook group is it's really, really hard to find proper information from a health professional's perspective. And we started doing it we had our first patient in 2019. And I remember that it was a patient with MS, elderly lady, and her husband was her carer. And he came in and he said, oh, I've got this, because he'd been talking to, they're from the UK, so quite familiar with products overseas. And I said, yep, we're on this journey together because I know nothing about this. And I have nowhere to go to see, because there's no, you know, like with normal medical things, there's you know, there's textbooks and there's training courses and there's all these sorts of things that you can do. And back then it was literally like, short of getting on Google and Reddit and Canna reviews, which is, I still do that to find some products, because there are some products that are not commercially available. It was pretty bad. And we kind of delved into it because we could see the need. I saw that if we don't learn about it, we are going to make mistakes, because you look at two products that I know are completely different, but they actually look the same. And that quite early on, and I was like, wow, we've either got to not do this at all or actually do it properly. So I kind of delved into learning about it, and I said to my husband, who's not anything medical, and I said, I genuinely feel like I need to go back to uni and do a whole new degree, because it's so complicated and so involved. And so what I've learned is, from picking up the phone, asking questions, asking for help, saying I don't understand, all those sorts of things. And I could see on, there's another Facebook group, it's a PSA, early career pharmacist group. I'm far from an early career pharmacist. And there were lots of questions. And it was just basic stuff like, oh, I've got a script for this. Where do I order it from? Or, oh, a patient's asked me about this vaporizer. I've never heard of it. Which are all the questions I had a couple of years ago. And I thought, this would be better if we can get all the information in one spot, have the forum easily accessible, and most people tend to be on Facebook more the oldies than the young ones, I'll admit. But I find Facebook good for this kind of forum, because, you know, you can search and things like that. We can control it as far as who's part of it, because the big thing is the TGA requirements, and they make it, I understand why. They have the rules they do, but they make it very difficult, because we're not permitted to actually say that we do medicinal cannabis as a service, that we can dispense products, that, you know, anything like that. So it's actually very hard to know who does it and who doesn't. But anyway, long short story is, I was sitting at my son's cricket match when it was rained out on my camp chair under my umbrella in February last year. This is a true story. And I was thinking, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so I just put a question up on this PSA page, and I said, oh, I'm just thinking about this. What if this would be helpful? Just give me the, you know, a like or thumbs up or whatever it's called. And I got all these. And then a younger pharmacist who works at another store, she was so lovely. She sends me this private message. And she said, oh, looks like this group will be good, but if you need help setting it up, I did one as my final year uni assignment like 2 years ago, and I went, please, because I don't have any idea how to do that. So, yep, so that's how it started, me sitting outside of a cricket match under an umbrella, and the rest is kind of history. But we've got heaps of members now, which is great. And now a lot of people help each other. So initially it was very much me answering the questions, but it's great. And that's the whole purpose of it, is I just want people to be able to, you know, help one another or direct people in the right way.
Lou, you've learnt so much about cannabis that now you're even working with other health professionals such as psychiatrists to help treat patients properly. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We work with psychiatrists, pain specialists, neurologists and GPs. Massive challenge we have in Canberra is there's very few doctors who prescribe, not because they're not supportive of the treatment. They just have a similar experience to what I did. And it was, where do I start? Oh, I don't know where to start. So most patients, they're either using it, you know, they're self-medicating, using it, growing it in their backyard, or they are going to the online telehealth clinics that are around Australia, because it's sort of definitely it started in, I think it was Queensland actually when it started. So there's a lot of excellent cannabis clinicians out there. So the psychiatrist, the way that started is it was just kind of word of mouth, and he rang us up and I happened to be put on the phone, and he said, oh, I'm just ringing because I understand that you do a bit of dispensing of medicinal cannabis, and I have a patient with severe PTSD who's currently buying it on the street and he's self-medicating and I need some help with what to prescribe. Now, asking someone that, it's like there are now over 1,000 possible products or 1,000 products. At the time, I think there was about 400 or 500. So it's not a, I have a headache, I'm going to have this amount of Panadol. So I was just chatting to the doctor on the phone about it. I said, oh, it could be this, could be this, but kind of, you know, I kind of need a bit more background. Anyway, and he said, do you mind if I get the patient to call you? And I'm like, no, that's fine. So this is kind of how it came out. So he talked to the patient, called me. Sometimes they actually come in and I'll sit with them in a consult room, sit with the patients, because they're quite complex conditions that these patients have. And I'll just explain it all to them, talk to them about a few things, answer any questions, and then I'll email the doctor back and just kind of like a referral of I've had this consult, this is what we discussed. And then when it comes to what to prescribe, obviously the doctor makes that decision. I can help with different products, or I would suggest this, not this, and things like that. And then it kind of, we sort of work together in that way, which is really lovely. And then with the neurologists and pain specialists as well, now that there's so many products available, it's very helpful because they'll often say, oh, I want my patient to have, you know, this dose of THC or this CBD or there's been this history, you know, the patient's used these flowers and it's not really working. So they'll come in and that's when we'll do, you know, we'll delve down into terpenes and all those sorts of things. So it's, yeah, it's still growing. I've still got so much to learn. I'm doing a formal course, actually, training course, because I was like, I need to learn more. And it's very interesting. But I think it's kind of like old-fashioned sort of doctor, pharmacist, patient, we're all working together, which is really good because the doctors don't know the stock level, like, and supply of cannabis products is a problem because it's a plant and it, you know, it only grows for so long and they can only grow so much so quickly and all those sorts of things. So, but that's kind of how that relationship came about, really.
Well, it's undeniable that you've put a lot of effort in to improve the knowledge and the service in the cannabis space. Talk to us about how it's played out for the patients. What sort of impact do you see it having on them?
For some of them, it's genuinely quite life-changing. And for others, it's an interesting journey. So I find there's two very distinct patient groups. There's the medical patients who are cannabis naive. They haven't used it before. They've just exhausted all other options. And so are now trying medicinal cannabis. And for a lot of them, there's one young guy, he's a DBA gentleman. He's in his late 30s, early 40s. He's younger than me, therefore he's young. And he used to come in doubled over. And he was on opioids and had to be medically discharged. And he now walks around like straight, no walking stick, nothing. He's sleeping better. He's reduced his opioids. Like it's awesome. And then there's other patients who they have medical conditions that they've never seen a doctor because they have what I term self-medicated for their anxiety or trauma or insomnia or whatever. And they are quite challenging because they don't have any experience really with the medical profession. So they're not used to rules and regulations and they don't really recognise that they have a condition because they've never really been diagnosed, but they do. And so I think it's good that they're now seeing doctors and you know, getting their cannabis through legal channels, but it's a completely different approach that's needed for those patients as far as getting them to just understand I don't know, probably just more understand how it all works, because they're just used to, oh, I just know if I use that, then I feel better. And then in 3 hours, it wears off. So I'm just going to use more. And then I'll feel better. And it's like, yes, but you could do this or this or this. So they take a lot more time and they're a lot more challenging, those patients. But, you know, a lot of them, there's one guy, he, you know, he started like that and he hit rock bottom last year. And finally, but it's, you know, he had to be ready. I said, when you're ready, this is my suggestion with what you do. And he hasn't worked for 6 years and he's back working and, you know, his pain's still not great, but it's a lot better. So it's the pay. I think the biggest thing for, you know, pharmacists who don't do it or who are a bit scared, or it, the patients take a lot more time. It definitely take a lot more time. Once everything's stabilized and they've got their, you know, their doses right, it's not as time consuming. But to start with, it's very time consuming.
Very, very interesting. Fascinating, in fact, that journey around medicinal cannabis. And I know there'll be people listening thinking, geez, how do I get into that Facebook group? So it'd be remiss of me not to ask on behalf of the listeners, what is the Facebook group called so they can check it out?
Medicinal Cannabis Support Group for Pharmacists is what it's called. There's a couple of questions that we ask, because I just make sure that you are a pharmacist or pharmacy student, just to make sure that the appropriate people are part of it.
Excellent. Now, as we start to wrap this up, Louise, you've been in the pharmacy game for a while now. You said before you're definitely not an early career pharmacist, and so I'm sure you've picked up some invaluable lessons along the way. If you could share one takeaway from your experience that you think could be useful to other pharmacy owners at any stage in their career, what would it be?
If I had to pick one thing, it would be what I said before about when you hit challenges, when you hit problems, things that are terrible, and you think, oh, is all the hard work worth it? Just have the right approach. As hard as it is, you're allowed to go home and have a cry. That's quite okay. That's everyone does that. But it's a roller coaster ride, and it's, you know, there are times that particularly financially, it's really hard. I know I went through times years ago where I was like, I actually have less money now than when I was working, because just the way it all works. So I think, but I think the big thing I've learned over the process is stick with it, have the right support network around you. That is super, super, super important. And the big thing is just try, even on the bad days, try and have a positive outlook with, yes, this is a problem and it's significant and I have to deal with it, but how are we going to overcome it? That would probably be my number one if I had to choose one thing.
Great advice. Louise, congratulations again on the wonderful achievement and recognition in being named the 2024 Guild Pharmacy of the Year. It really is a testament to the amazing work you and the team deliver to the community. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and experience with us.
That's okay. Thank you for having me.
Next up, it's Policy Corner, where we dive into the policy world of the Guild's latest submissions. Whether it's an update on an existing proposal or a brand new initiative, these submissions have the potential to shape the landscape of pharmacy.
Joining us now for Policy Corner is, as always, Scott Harris, Director of Workplace Relations and Business at the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, to expand even further on our previous two discussions, which have been looking at the changes to the industrial relations legislation. So, Scott, welcome back. And as we've mentioned in previous chats, there have been four changes to the Fair Work Act 2009 since 2022 in December. Today, we're going to discuss the changes introduced through the Fair Work Legislation Amendment, Closing Loopholes Act 2023. So, firstly, let's start with, why did the federal government believe that some changes were necessary?
Thanks, Daniel. It's been good to come back and talk to you again about these particular changes that the current federal government believed was necessary to be introduced into the workplaces, because they didn't believe the system was fair enough for the employees. So they thought these changes would make it an equitable system between the employers and the employees, which, as an employer association, as the Pharmacy Guild, we quite don't agree with their view of the situation. We form the opinion or view that it seems to the pendulum again has swung more towards employees and they've got more rights in the workplace, which is okay to look after them. It's coming at the detriment of the employers on how to run a business and make the business sustainable into the future. So let's talk about the third trench is what's been classed as in the legislation changes, which was, as you said, the Fair Work Legislation Amendments Closing Loopholes Bill 2023. It was tabled in September 23. There's 284 pages in this piece of legislation, so it's one of the biggest ones out of the lot so far. It had a lot of things in this, what they class as an omnibus bill, that was unacceptable to employers. And I'll put that very simply. It was unacceptable on a lot of the changes they wanted to put through. And there was a crossbench in the Senate actually agreed with a lot of the positions of the employers that there was too much combined together. So with lobbying with us and other employer associations with the crossbenchers, we actually got the bill separated into two parts, being number one and then number two, which was passed this year. In the number one was a series of topics or articles that was believed, which is not over controversial, and employers were backing them as a reasonable part. It wasn't negative. They were just trying to make the places a little bit better. So let's talk about some of those changes. Even though we didn't agree with them and wholehearted, we just could not go against them. So for an example, I'm looking at the part, there's nine major areas to the changes in the December one. They were talking about same job, same pay, but that was predominantly to do with labour hire workers and predominantly in industries like mining, community labour, not community labour hire, but in the labour hire like Ravens, like Hayes's, those areas. Very limited impact on community pharmacy. Same as the anomaly where they're talking about is small business exemptions from redundancy pay. Not limited effect. Increases the Work Health and Safety Act on penalties, but there was one that did get introduced that will impact all businesses across Australia under the Work Health and Safety Act, was the introduction of industrial manslaughter, where if somebody is seriously injured or in the worst case scenario, a death occurs on your site or in your workplace, there is the possibility now that the directors and the CEO of the company will be held accountable if that occurred. If they have not done all reasonable practical to make sure an injury or a death can be prevented. There was a Comcare change, which is to do with emergency services, nothing to do with community pharmacy. There was one to do with protection action ballots, which is predominantly comes about as where industrial action occurs in a workplace in regards where they're negotiating for a new enterprise agreement. Most of the community pharmacies are covered or apply the pharmacy industry ward and don't have their own agreement. So it didn't affect us a great deal. That left us with a couple of points that were going to directly impact on us in a significant way. I'll just cover those ones to give the listeners a point to go with it. First one is criminal liability for wage theft. All employer groups were in agreement that where an employer deliberately, intentionally, or systematically did not pay a person correctly or took wages off an employee, that should be a criminal offence. We were not defending them in one ounce. Where we were defending them is where the employer had made, he might have made an honest mistake in when they entered their wage rates or the classifications of it. Why should they be held accountable as a criminal offence if they have made an honest mistake? That was our major argument. But we were very comfortable if they deliberately took the money off the person that they were supposed to pay the wages to, let the courts have a go at them. So with effect January 2025, wage theft legislation or penalties for a criminal offence will apply to all businesses with greater than 15 headcount. Less than 15 headcount doesn't start till January 2026. So it's one of the big ones I'm saying to listeners on this part is make sure you have classified your people right. make sure you have checked that wages are right, that you've inputted in the system. The Guild provides members with all that information. It's on the website or ring us up to talk to advisors, and we can help you through that to remove some of those risks to you. But if you deliberately do it, you won't get much sympathy.
So, Scott, when that starts to play out, how did the legislation changes impact the Guild's members, including the Pharmacy Industry Award?
In that particular topic, it's across everybody, regardless of what anybody who's employed under Australian conditions is that's going to impact on. So there was no get-out-of-jail-free cards in this one. If you employ people, the wage theft one will apply to you. We've tried our best to educate members and provide the information for them to make sure they're not at risk, but we can't count for those people who may deliberately or intentionally do that. They've got to wear the penalties which go with it.
So, Scott, when did or how will the changes occur? Have they already rolled out and are in place, or is it a phased approach, or is it coming still?
No, it's a straight in with effect 1st of January 2025. The wage theft one will apply. There is no grace period. The grace period is to the end of this year to make sure you recheck your wage sheets, recheck your employment classifications, ensure you're doing the right ones. But come after the 1st of July, you will, if you've been doing it, will face criminal penalties. That's in lines with the increase to the normal civil penalties. There was two other areas on that side, Daniel, was to go with this. There was an increase to you change to protecting union delegates' rights in the workplace. They just strengthened it, which means if the person in your workplace is a union delegate and a recognised union delegate, they've got rights, and you as the employer are not to take any action against them because if they have to exercise those rights as a union delegate. They've just strengthened up those, which is going to impact on community pharmacy. Even though we don't have a lot of union coverage within community pharmacy itself, it applies regardless. So members have to be aware of it. And there was the one that really needs to be really thought about is where one of your staff may, in extremely unfortunate situations, be exposed to violence in their home life. The changes to the legislation makes it very clear that those people who are in those circumstances are to be protected as much as possible and reasonably as practical. And that's an obligation on all the workplaces. Community pharmacy will see it because they're usually the first point of call where somebody comes in, and a pharmacist or the staff in the pharmacy will actually pick up on a regular basis that something's not right with the person. So they've got to be very conscious of that, and it's not provide guidance and help, but to be aware not to do anything to those people, but try to assist them if they can. So out of this one round of legislation, Daniel, there was only a few changes, and they're not specifically just for community pharmacy, they're for all workplaces, but they will change the award and make new obligations. And the Guild will be running some updated sessions as we go when these dates come around. Like, these are all dates from now right through to the middle of 2025, and we'll be reminding members about what their obligations, responsibility is to ensure they abide by these changes and minimise the risks to their workplace.
So, Scott, just to underline that, for those people listening to this and thinking that they should find out more information, what can they do? Where can they go?
If they're a member, no problems at all. Jump onto the website, and there's a lot of information we've put up there already in simple fact sheets and information to help them through the situations. If they're still uncertain and would like to talk, just ring an advisor on the line to your state and territory ones and have a conversation about what your obligations are. Talk about what you need to do. Talk about what happens if you don't do it. Talk about how we can put it in place and make it as easy as possible. We're there to help make sure they meet their obligations where we possibly can. Have a conversation, bring forward, be honest about what you want to do or what you want to achieve, and we can try to help you. We'll tell you if you can't do something, but we'll work with you on what you can do and how you can go about it.
Scott Harris, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Daniel.
It's always so much fun to hear from a Pharmacy of the Year winner. It's definitely one of the highlights because their passion for community pharmacy really does shine through. So thank you to Louise for sharing her experience. And once again, a big congratulations to everyone at Capital Chemist Southlands. As Louise said, the process to respond to a nomination is worth the journey, regardless of whether you win or not. I've been your host, Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 4 of The Guild Dispensary.